The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 433. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest is a gentleman by the name of David Hedgecock, who has a long career in the industry of comics. In fact, as you'll hear him talk, he was an associate publisher for IDW Comics, and he's held a lot of different positions with several different companies over the years. But recently, he decided that he wanted to produce his own comic. And so we're going to talk about Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Funtime Go, which I know is a mouthful. And we'll talk about why this project is entitled that. We'll talk about the process for creating the project. We'll talk about all the different folks who have chipped in to make this a reality. We'll even talk about David's new endeavor, which is coming a little bit later on this fall, called Miss Mina and the Midnight Gladiators. It's a fun episode, and when I happened to just stumble across the project on Kickstarter, first of all, the Kickstarter campaign had already closed, and so I reached out to David and said, hey, I missed the boat, but I'd love to have you on the show because I think that Super Kaiju is just so wacky and wild, and it's got things that I loved as a kid, kaiju and roller derby, and you know, it's got a rock and roll band to it. It's a unique tale. I'm so happy that David and I could connect and we could talk about this project, and of course Miss Mina as well. Before we get into the conversation I had with David, got a few house cleaning items to talk about real quick. First off, this is going to be the last PVD cast for a couple of weeks. I'm going on vacation, so June 20th and 27th, there will not be a new episode. I work hard. I deserve to take a little break. I'm going up to see mom and stepdad in Rhode Island, so I'm really looking forward to it. But I'll be back in July with brand new episodes. So if you're new to this podcast, you got plenty of material. You got 432 other episodes that you can dive into. Just go over to pvdcast.com or check out any of those normal, ordinary avenues, outlets, apps like Spotify, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, etc., etc. And you can dive into the catalog and check out some really cool podcast episodes. And I need to also real quickly thank, of course, a great sponsor of this show. Of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. World's Greatest Comics is located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from all eras, whether you're talking golden, silver, bronze, or modern. But they also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, posters, a great staff, a wonderful pool system, a clean, friendly store. They got it all. So definitely check out the store if you're in Central Ohio. If you're not in Central Ohio and you can't stop by the store, check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty darn active on their Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with David Hedgecock. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I am sitting down with Mr. David Hedgecock. You are the man behind a book that has the most original title I have ever heard in the world of comics, Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Funtime Go.
Yeah. Thanks.
You got to tell the listeners here real quick. How did you come up with that title? That's that's very, very, very original.
So yeah, that's a good question right out of the gate. So, you know, back in the day, you had like one of the what is the most successful indie comic of the last like 40 years? It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the first time somebody said Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to somebody, I'm sure the response was, that's insane. You can't call it that. Nobody will ever remember that. You can't have a title that long, right? But of course it worked. Of course, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is, you know, this massive phenomenon. And now a lot of that has to do with, you know, Kevin Eastman and his co-conspirator, you know, creating the project. But that there's something in a name, right? So I was like, well, what is the, you know, what is that? So I was just kind of playing around with that idea one day, the long title idea. And in the back of my head, I knew I wanted to do sort of like this kaiju monster book and fighting a rock and roll band. I knew that was a thing. And so I started like, you know, kaiju rock and roll, right? And then I was like, no, that's not enough. Super kaiju rock and roll. And I'm like, No. These girls aren't just a rock band. They're a roller derby team, because that's the other thing that I, you know, like I'm into, right? So I'm like, they're a roller derby team too. So it just got like, okay, Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby, like perfect, right? Actually, for a while, I think it was Rock and Roller Disco Derby, because I just thought disco would be a nice added word in there, but it doesn't fit, so I took it out. But I was like, okay, what else can I do to this thing? So I'm like, you know what? Let's just go all the way. Let's like lean into that sort of like anime, you know, manga feel, and just tacked on the Fun Time Go piece at the end. So we got Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Fun Time Go. It makes sense, I promise. Like when you get into the book, you're like, oh yeah, this is appropriately titled.
Well, can you describe what the book is all about?
Yeah, so the book is about, you know, this group of 20 something girls who are kind of down on their luck. You know, they're kind of like they got a lot of talent but not a lot of money kind of situation. You know, they're early in their careers and they're sort of, you know, having a tough time making a go of life, despite, you know, the talent that they have. And they sort of tour the West Coast, as a roller derby team, they kind of tour the West Coast, and they have sort of become friends as part of this roller derby team, but they really sort of become like true mates when they sort of form a rock band called the Burnouts. So they're the Diva Demons as the roller derby team, and they're touring the West Coast as a roller derby team. And then occasionally they get a chance to put on a concert after the games. So as the Burnouts, they'll sometimes put shows on after the games. And that's kind of how they're making a rough living. And things, you know, are sort of not going great for one of our characters, Harmony, who's the drummer of the band. And then the giant kaiju shows up and things go from there.
Is there, and I don't want you to give away too much to the book, but is there a reason as to why the kaiju show up?
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
So
that was a loaded question. I was a little hesitant to ask.
If you read page 2 and 3 carefully, you will. So the artist, Rolando Mayada, who's a very good friend of mine, I've known for 15 years. We've committed to each other and committed to the book. So we're going to do 4 full length books on this, guaranteed. So book 1, we just finished the Kickstarter for book 1. There's an Indiegogo campaign for anybody who missed out. We're running an Indiegogo campaign for the next 2 weeks. So we're going to shut it down around the end of June. So if you miss the Kickstarter, you still have a chance to get in on the ground floor of this little party we're throwing. But we're committed to each other for the first 4 books. And if you read page 2 and 3, I promise you, by the time you get to book 4, those first 2 pages are going to pay off in a big way. That's how far I know what's going on. That's how detailed we're getting. Like, not that you have to know every little thing, but there's an Easter egg on page 2, basically, that pays off in book 4. So yeah, we know there's reasons, and you'll learn them along the way, probably with me in some of the cases.
That had to be really, what's the word I'm looking for? Really, really difficult to do, is to that early on give that Easter egg, or did you not find that challenging at all? I can imagine some writers.
I don't know, man. You know, it's funny. I so I've been in comics for almost 20 years now. Maybe 20 years at this point. But I was always an artist. I came up from the art side. Like when I was working as a freelancer professionally, I was drawing comic books. So I didn't really write this stuff. I was just drawing it. I would dabble in writing, but I never really wrote professionally. And then, you know, I spent the second half of my career as on the editorial side, you know, editing books. You know, I worked at IDW. I owned my own company for a while, and then I worked at IDW as the editor-in-chief and associate publisher over there for several years. I was there for 6 or 7 years. And so this is actually, Super Kaiju was a thing that, it was just like this plot that I had that's been sitting around since, I don't even know. It's been sitting around for like at least 10 years, 15 years. In fact, when Pacific Rim, the first Pacific Rim movie came out, I went, oh my God, I got to get this book done. I got to get this thing out before somebody does the same thing, you know? And of course I didn't, I'm only doing it now in 2024, but anyway, so it's really kind of like I've written other things, but this is the first time I've really kind of written in a way that I would say is professional, right? Like it's a professionally written script. It's got all the hallmarks, I think, of a professional book. And I know that because I've got years of experience as an editor now. And I also know that because I have people that I trust, like Ron Mars, you know, who's been working in the industry for 30 years, who's looking over my shoulder and reading the scripts and sort of saying, hey, this works, this doesn't, you know, add this in, throw this out. And like, you know, when the guy that wrote Silver Surfer and Green Lantern for, you know, a decade plus each one, and then did another 100-issue run on Witchblade in between, it's like, when that guy tells you, hey, this is one of the best things I've read in a while, you're like, okay, cool. I think I got it, right? But in terms of like knowing what to do, like because I read a book and it taught me how to do it, that never happened. That's just, it's mostly just having the really cool opportunity to like read scripts by some incredibly talented people over the last, you know, 15 years and just sort of absorbing the lessons, you know, that I see, you know, in the way they've crafted their stories and pacing and storytelling and character development and plot, I've just sort of gotten to see it firsthand from some really, really incredibly talented people. So it just sort of like, I don't know, it washed over me somehow. So when stuff like that come up, I didn't know it was going to happen until I started thinking about it, and then it happened. But I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Like it wasn't a planned thing until it was, if that makes sense.
Okay. No, it makes perfect sense. It absolutely does. Well, let's talk a little bit about your characters, your protagonists. What are your inspirations for Harmony, Cadence, Viola, Melody, and is it Lyra or Lyra?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's Lyra, like lyric. I think that's how I've never actually said it out loud. Inspiration, I don't know. Like I can tell you like those strong ones that I had were, for me, Lyra is like 100% Pam Grier for me, like, and very specifically like Pam Grier from Coffee in particular, like that's my jam. I love, and so Lyra has that sort of very, you know, she's a leader, you know, and she's got those sort of hard nose sort of qualities that I think someone needs to lead correctly. I think that's probably my biggest inspiration for any of the characters. Everyone else was just sort of, it just came up through my own sort of like, I don't know, you try to work out your own problems, I guess, in some of this stuff, you know? So there's just little aspects and characteristics I think of, just stuff that I think about or do. And it's just sort of comes out on the page. But Lyra is probably the only one where I was like, when I write Lyra, Pam Grier's voice is in my head, you know, I'm thinking about like, okay, like this is who she is. Right. But everybody else is sort of developing organically. I have like story beats around Harmony who at the outset was like my lead character. But the rest of the girls sort of very quickly like became a big part of the story as well. So Harmony's probably like an important through line character for things that happen, but she's certainly not the only important character at this point.
I'm going to deviate for a minute because you brought the name. You brought up the name Pam Grier. There seems to be a little bit of hint of blaxploitation movies in Super Kaiju. Are you a fan of blaxploitation films?
The inspiration, I would kind of wear my inspirations on my sleeve for this book in particular. You know, this is sort of just like a fun, you know, mashup of all the things that I loved, movies in particular that I loved when I was growing up. So you definitely get a lot of, like, obviously you get a lot of like old Godzilla movies, right? Like from the 50s up until probably the Shōhei era. I'm not sure how to say that properly, but basically around by the end of the 90s, like I kind of cap it around the end of the Shōhei era. I know I'm getting that wrong, saying that wrong, but sort of the mid to late 90s, everything before that, basically, like, definitely influence on me. Definitely blaxploitation films, you know, of the 70s, 100%, several other movies of the 70s as well. And then you also get a lot of kung fu cinema. Like, you know, for me, when I was growing up and I was a kid, I would sit down on Saturday mornings with a giant bowl of Lucky Charms and then watch cartoons all morning. Then there would be a brief break to go outside and, like, get the, you know, squirrely energy out. And then I'd come right back inside, and then I'm watching, like, 12 o'clock, Kung Fu Cinema would start. And then I'd watch a cool, you know, the Legend of the Five Deadly Venoms or something, you know, watch that, you know, and then I'm back out to play for the rest of the day, right? So that was kind of definitely, like, 100%. Those were things were all coming up in my head, you know, when I was working on the book. Without a doubt, those were, like, strong influences on me.
Well, first of all, you said the Five Deadly Venoms. Mad respect on that, because I think that's a film not a lot of people know about. So I was introduced to it from a coworker, and then I went in after watching it. I'm like, that was amazing. That was, thank you for bringing this to me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm so into that stuff that, like, legit, I take a couple pages in the back of the first book. I decided, just for fun, because, you know, talking about influences, I did a full, like, page review of Foxy Brown. And then I did a full page review of the Five Deadly Venoms. So it's actually in the book. So
nice.
I'm very much wearing my influences on my sleeve. Like, I'm pointing it out to people, like, hey, look here. I'm not trying to hide it. Like, this stuff is cool, man. You got to check it out. If you like what I'm doing, you got to see where this stuff is coming from.
Well, let's talk about some of the covers, because off air, we were talking about, you know, that you've been lucky enough, blessed enough, grateful enough, whatever verb and adjective you want to use, to have some heavy hitters, so to speak, help you out with some covers, such as Ed Benes, of course, Bart Sears. I'm sure there's a few others that I'm forgetting. Chris Cross. I knew there was a couple I was forgetting, but...
Yeah, I got some great guys.
You did. Can you explain how the creative process worked with some of these folks?
So with this first book, you know, I kind of had the ability to sort of build it out without any hard deadlines. And it's kind of the beauty of sort of this new business model where, you know, and I'm not the only one doing this by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, when you're working in the direct market, you're a slave sort of to the direct market, the way the direct market works. And the direct market needs new content, and they need it at a pretty steady pace, right? So, like, when I was the editor in chief at IDW Publishing, and we were pushing 50, 60 new comic books every single month. So every 4 weeks, we had 60 new products. It's a lot of work, and it requires a ton of people to do that. And you don't always get to, the stars don't always align. You know, you don't always get the exact person that you want for a cover or to handle interiors or to write whatever. You know, sometimes it's like, hey, get the best person that's available right now, right? So thankfully, in this sort of new model where you've got distribution like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, it's a different system. You're going direct to the consumer. And so it's more about being able to take the time to make the thing that I want to make in the way that I want to make it, and then offering it to people at a time that's most convenient for them and for me, right? So the beauty of that is that I can go out to guys like Paul Pelletier, who is always busy, right? Like Paul's been working in this industry for 30 years. He's worked on Wolverine and Incredible Hulk, and he's doing a G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero run right now. And then he's going to be at DC. Like every time I talk to him, he's got three different projects going. So for him to be able to squeeze in, he's also very fast, but even all that, he's so busy. So for him to be able to squeeze in a cover for me, like he wants to do it for me because we're friends and he wants to do, and he likes the project, but when's he going to find time? Right. So the nice thing about the way this model works with Kickstarter is that I can tell him, hey, look, man, I don't need it for the next, you can give it to me in like 6 weeks. I'm still good. And I love that. And it's allowed me to get some really cool people, you know, you named them, like Bart Sears, another guy. I mean, he's always going to be busy. Ed Benes is incredibly busy. He said no to me like 2 times before he said yes, just because of deadline stuff, you know. But you know, we've got a cover by Fico Osio, who, if you don't know the name, he's starting to blow up over at DC. He's done work on Superman. He did the Miracle Man miniseries a year or two ago. He's done some Aquaman stuff. And he's going to be like the next big thing, and he's constantly busy, but I was still able to get a cover from him because, you know, because he liked the project, and also because I was able to have these like longer deadlines. So it's really benefited the book itself, like having guys like that lend their vision and their talent, especially in these early days of the book. It's really helped because it allows me to sort of see what's possible, you know, because I have a certain way that I think about these things visually in my head. But when you get somebody with that at that level of talent, they're going to surprise you. They're going to give you something that's going to be better than anything you can imagine, right? Because that's why they get paid the way they, that's where all, they're, that's why they're the professionals. So having the ability to afford them the time to really think it through and deliver something unique and interesting, they need that time, and it's been great for the property. So I'm really grateful that we're able to do this project this way. I'm really loving the Kickstarter platform. It's a fantastic platform, in my opinion.
Well, let's talk about the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter's over. It just wrapped up a few days ago, and I'm glad that you mentioned there's an Indiegogo for the project, because I myself even need to go over and get a copy as well. That's one of my questions on my list. How do you get the copy? Because I found out about the project too late. So, and that's being completely transparent. Talk to us about, how's it feel to have the Kickstarter over? Do you feel like, you know, relieved? Are you excited? Talk to me about the experience of having things pretty much all wrapped up. In fact, you also told me that you have kind of a working proof back from the printers. Is that correct?
Yeah, our pre-press is completely done. We've uploaded the final files to the printer, who is, for the book itself, the printer's in China. I tried my best to get it done in the U.S., but the cost was just, it was literally 3 times as much to do it in the United States. So we're bringing as many other parts of the campaign, all the other printing things that we're doing, we're bringing all of that in the U.S., but the book itself is being printed in China. So there's going to be it's done. It's uploaded. It's printed. They'll start printing next week, I'm sure. We're on the account. We've already settled on all of the sort of bells and whistles of the printing. We ended up going like oversized on it. So instead of being comic book size, it's going to be more like magazine sized. And the reason for that is that the art's so good. You know, the interior artists, Rolo does the main story, does the first 20-page story. And then I've got another art team, the Zhang brothers, who have done the two backup stories. There's four-page backup stories that are added. And the art is just so good that I was like, man, we gotta show this stuff off. So we went at no charge to anybody. You know, I just made the decision to pay the extra money. We're getting oversized, square bound, hardcover, lay flat, spot varnish on the covers. It's going to be a gorgeous book. I can't wait for people to see it. Another thing that I love about Kickstarter is that it allows just the time frames. Like, okay, I know all these cool things that we can do with printing, you know, because I've been doing this forever, but you always get the chance to do it because you're like, you know, you got to go move quickly or, you know, commerce reasons. But for this, I don't have to do that. So I'm super excited to get the book printed the way I want it. And I think everybody's going to really love it. But the Kickstarter itself, like for me, I got very anxious leading right up to the campaign and like the launch of the campaign. And then my wonderful, wonderful wife, sort of pulled me aside and said, you know, David, you don't have to do this. You get to do this. You know, this is the prize. This is like the, this is the thing that you wanted to do. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. Like, this is the prize. Like, I'm not doing this because I have to. I'm doing this because I want to, because this is like, these are the things that bring me joy. And putting myself out there in terms of like a Kickstarter and like sharing what I'm doing with people, yeah, that's kind of like nervous, right? Because, oh my God, what if everybody hates it, right? But at the same time, this is the joy. So I really like, man, she flipped a switch in my head. And I, from that point on, I just loved the whole experience. It was actually a really pleasant, fun experience. And so I just had a great time with it. I loved it. And it was exactly what I wanted. Like, I want to be able to interact with the customers, right? Like the people that are going to read this eventually, like people like you, like getting a chance to talk to people and find out what they liked or just what they're into, or just like, hey, who are you as a person? Like, I hope you like what I did. Like, I hope you enjoy it, you know? Just having that ability, it's so gratifying, so nice, like just to be able to do that. And you can't do that, you know, if it was in a regular comic book shop, you know, not, and I'm a guy that goes to the comic book shop every week. So I certainly don't want to disparage that experience. It's just a different experience. And I'm really enjoying this version, the Kickstarter experience, where I'm talking directly to the customers, basically. It was super fun. And we did pretty much exactly just about what I expected we were going to do. So there weren't really any big surprises. The only thing that was kind of, that I would say is frustrating, not to paint a completely rosy picture, was there was a point where I was like, I don't remember what it was, but it was like, we were right at like $11,000 or $12,000 or something like that. And it was like a goal, like a stretch goal, where we were going to hit a stretch goal. And we went over it and I was like, yes. And then like 5 minutes later, or an hour later, we were under it because, you know, like two or three people had canceled. And then we went back over it again. And then we went under it. And so we, like, there was a day, it was like one day where we went over this stretch goal and under it like three or four times. And I was just like, oh my God, this is killing me, man. Come on, let's get past this. And then, but then we did, you know, we did way more than that. But it was, there was a day there where I was like, oh, this is killing me.
Well, before we start talking about your next project here real quick, let's just let people know timeline roughly for getting the book to them. Do you have an estimated timeline for those people that supported the project or the Kickstarter campaign?
We said August and we're still on track. So okay. I'm hoping, you know, part of it is at the whim of the shipping boat, the boats, right? Like once the book gets on, the boat's going to be on the book probably in the next 3 or 4 weeks. The books will be on the boat. But then it's just, we're at the whims of shipping and then once it hits the port and things like that. But I think I feel pretty confident that we're still going to hit our August release. So I think we'll be shipping books out to everybody the second week of August is what it's looking right now, like right now. And that'll include all the like bells and whistles stuff, including like all the sketches and head sketches and full body sketches that Rollo's doing. He's actually already completed all of them. So we got all that done. So even like the special high-end reward stuff should all ship about first or second week of August. And then I'm assuming, you know, normal USPS standard, like another week or so for people to actually get their books. So third or fourth week of August is what we're looking at, which is what I thought it was going to be the whole time.
And let's not forget, Indiegogo is still live, you said, till the end of June. So if you missed the Kickstarter like I did, you still got an opportunity to jump on the project, correct?
Yeah. And the cool thing about the Indiegogo Kickstarter that we're just kind of, you know, all of this is a learning experience. Kickstarter stuff is really a learning experience for me, and Indiegogo especially. So what we did though was, so if you were on the Kickstarter already, like we're going to actually have stretch goals on the Indiegogo to try to hit some more of the stretch goals that we didn't hit on the Kickstarter, and everybody will get all the stretch goals. So it doesn't matter which campaign you pledge to, every single stretch goal that everybody that we get on either one will go to everybody. So that's kind of cool. I'm happy that we were able to pull that off. And then the other thing is there is a unique cover for Indiegogo, but if you pledge to the Kickstarter campaign, it's available in the backer kit. So you can order it there. You don't have to pledge to the Indiegogo campaign. So I'm hoping that, you know, if you're a Kickstarter, if you pledge to the Kickstarter, don't worry, you're totally taken care of, right? And maybe you'll even get some more stuff. And then if you haven't, you know, for those few people who haven't, who missed out, and I've heard this from a few people, not just you, then, you know, hey, guess what? Here you go. Here's everything. You're not going to miss a thing. We even added the original art tiers that we had, still had left over from the Kickstarter campaign. So even like original art is available. So I'm super glad that we were able to do it. Super big props to my campaign manager, Murphy, who she's just like, you know, taking super on top of everything and has really made everything work great.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with David for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. As you know, they are a proud sponsor of the PVD cast and also 1 5-star comic book store. They've got everything you need for your fandom, whether you're talking about single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, you name it, they got it. So stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. Well, let's talk about a new project you have coming up. Want to tell us a little bit about Miss Mina real quick?
Yeah. So, the Zhang brothers who did the 4-page backups, and they actually do, if you see the Indiegogo campaign, they did you'll see a bunch of their art on the campaign. And they also did the most popular of the covers. Like, it's funny, I've got, you know, an Ed Benes cover, but the most popular cover is the one that the Zhang brothers did. And it just happens to be the one where the girls are in bikinis sitting on top of a giant kaiju foot. But, you know, shocking. Shocking that that's the most popular one, right? Anyway, so their art just blew me away. Like, they did the cover, and I was like, man, this is a winning cover. Like, this thing is great. And I knew how good it was. And I said, can you do another piece for me? So they did another piece, and it was equally as cool. In fact, the second piece that they did with me is the Backer Kit Indiegogo exclusive cover now. And I was like, man, this is really good too. Do you guys do interiors? Do you have any interest? And they're like, yeah, we're up for it. I'm like, fantastic. So I wrote these 4-page stories with them, and they crushed them. And I was like, oh my God, I can't let these guys go. Like, I got to find some work for these guys. So I just said, hey, you know, do you want to do a book? And they said yes. And then I had to figure out what I was going to write for them. So,
well, give us a little summary of what this means. Yeah.
So, what I figured out was what I eventually came to over the course of a panicked 6 to 8 weeks was a book called Miss Mina and the Midnight Guardians. And it's basically a 19th century steampunk story. Essentially, it's 1801, and Mina Murray and her ragtag team of monstrous misfits battle the vampire king Dracula for control of the world. So Dracula is on the warpath and is essentially taking over Eastern Europe. And Mina Murray and her team are in the United States, but sort of trying to plot and plan how to counter Dracula and stop him from doing what he's doing. The first story is called The Legend of the Golden Jaguar. They have to find this golden jaguar. Dracula is interested in the golden jaguar for some reason, and Mina and her team have to find it and stop Dracula from getting it and securing it themselves. So there's a little bit of like Indiana Jones. There's a ton of Hammer horror influences here. If you remember a movie called The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, that was kind of like probably this core inspiration. That was a movie from the 70s that was a combination of the Shaw brothers, who again did all the martial art movies from the 70s, that the Shaw brothers were like the production studio that did a ton of those movies, and Hammer Horror Films. It was the only collaboration they ever had. They created this movie called The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. So that was sort of the inspiration for this first story. So it's got a little bit of action adventure, lots of cute girls running around, shooting crossbows at giant vampire monsters, and we've got like a steampunk Frankenstein and an invisible woman, and
a moth woman, and it's super fun. And the Zhang brothers just crushed the art. If you have, I hope you guys can see some of that. We started dribbling out some of the art for it. If you go to Kickstarter and just type in Miss Mina, it should pop up, Miss Mina and the Midnight Guardians. And or if you want to follow the Fun Time Go Instagram, we're going to post a ton of art there. We've also got the Facebook, which is Fun Time Go as well. So we're posting a ton of art, and the Zhang brothers are crushing it. And we've got another, like, just killer's row, murder's row worth of cover talent, Ludo Lullaby, who just did the Battle Chasers book with Joe Madureira. He just did like the four issues of Battle Chasers. He did the cover, one of the lead covers for us, and he just crushed it. Just so, it looks so good. And that's just the start. So we're going to be sharing a bunch of the art here coming soon. So I'm excited for people to see it.
So the status of that project is it ready to go and ready to have a Kickstarter?
We're talking, you're getting in on the ground floor on this one. Okay. So the idea is going to be that we're going to ship Super Kaiju in August. And then at the end of August, when everybody's either got their books or about to get their books, we're going to launch the Miss Mina campaign. So the Miss Mina campaign should launch around August 20th. And it'll come right on the heels of delivering Super Kaiju. The book is two pages away from being done. Almost all the covers are already done. So it's another book that, you know, it's done and it's going to be ready to go. And we're going to hit the same sort of timeline as Super Kaiju, where, you know, me and the team that I have helping me, you know, we're all professionals. Like, we've done this stuff for years, and we're not going to mess around when it comes to delivering a quality product, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. Like, we know what we're doing. I can't wait to show the art. Oh my God. Like, the Zhang brothers sent me a page today, and I was floored. I don't even know. I can't give it away. So good. Okay. So good. They're great.
All right. Well, David, before we wrap things up here real quick, final question here. Obviously, you are a huge comic book fan. Who are some of your favorite characters or favorite comic books that you love to read?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Right in this moment, I'm really enjoying Spider-Boy. I think Dan Slott's Spider-Boy, first of all, Paco Medina's art is fantastic. And then you get Steve Lealoha backups, and Steve Lealoha is like chef's kiss, right? So I'm just loving the art. The Umberto Ramos design on Spider-Boy in particular really appeals to me. Love the color scheme, love the design. And I'm just really loving the stories. It's fun. They're fun stories. It kind of feels like it's, you know, it's lighthearted adventures with a young kid who's just trying to make his way, you know. And I'm just really, and I love the conceit that he remembers everybody, but nobody remembers him. Like, what a tragic, like, twist. And so I'm just really enjoying that. And some of the, like, peripheral characters and villains that Dan Slott's created for it, like Helifino, like, what a great name for a villain. So I'm just enjoying that book a lot. Historically, New Warriors was always my jam. Like, Speedball is probably one of my all-time favorite characters. And yeah, you know, and then like, if I'm going way back, like the book that got me hooked on comics was Captain Carrot and His Amazing Zoo Crew. That was like my super jam, right? Like, when I was really young, that was the thing that really hooked me. So
who put that out? Was that, that was
DC.
That was DC?
Yeah. Okay. Roy Thomas wrote it. And like, the Roy Thomas, right? And Scott Shaw was the original artist, and then they had a couple of film artists here and there, but the Scott Shaw Roy Thomas version of Captain Carrot and His Amazing Zoo Crew was like, that cemented my love of comics in a way that here I am today, you know, 40 years later, still making comic books.
You know what, this will be odd. I'm gonna share real quick. My first three comic books I ever got was a three pack of Shogun Warriors.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good. You know, I've been like thinking about Herb Trimpe a lot lately, and that guy was really underrated. And I think part of the reason why he was underrated is because he was on a lot of those licensed books around that time, like Shogun and Godzilla and some of the other ones that the licensed books that he was on that never got reprinted. right? Mm-hmm. And so you mm-hmm. didn't see some of like Herb Trimpe's like best stuff is in Shogun, right? But no one even knows that book exists because they can't reprint it because of the licensing rights. So I'm with you on that Shogun, man. That was a badass book. I love that book.
It was. I remember it because I'm from the era where you could get like a 3-pack or a 5-pack at like Sears, you know, because they would just randomly right. have comic books at Sears, you know, and yeah. That's made awesome. No sense. But yeah, that was my first one. And I got it. And
were actually, all three, they weren't even like consecutive, right? There's like three,
no, they
five,
were.
And,
oh, no, they, no were? They were one, two, oh, nice. Three. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. That was even more. Yeah, because later other bundles I would get, yeah, they were not sequential. They were like 59, 72, 101.
Yeah, right.
What? You know, so.
Yeah, that's funny. I've been putting together. I just picked up a piece of original art probably about 6 months back of Herb Trimpe, and it's from the Fantastic Four Unlimited comic book. Do you remember that book?
I don't.
So there was a moment when Herb Trimpe was basically trying to do a Rob Liefeld imitation. And like I've since learned that Herb wasn't, I mean, it was a commercial look in that moment, right? When Rob Liefeld was big, like everybody was trying to do Rob Liefeld, right? But Herb Trimpe was trying to do it probably to get work, but also because he just loved that. He was really into it. He was really into the style, according to, I don't know, I heard on an interview or something. I really have been doing this deep dive on Herb Trimpe. I was like, oh my God, this stuff is so cool. So I actually got a piece of original art about 6 months back from, what was it? Fantastic Four Unlimited, like issue 13 or something. And he penciled and inked it. And it is spectacular. It's like the most peak 1994 thing that you could possibly own. Like Herb Trimpe doing Rob Liefeld on a Fantastic Four Unlimited book. I loved it. It's so good. I'm so happy with it.
Well, hey, I could tell you stories about the old shield that I have behind me here that's autographed nice. By Starenko.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Is it a poster? What is that?
It is a poster. It's like a facsimile. It's not, I bought it at New York City Comic Con, to be honest with you, because I always dug that cover. Like I wasn't a big fan of Shield, but I dug that cover. That cover just spoke to me. And I found it, I bought it. And then I went to Pittsburgh Comic Con and I had it with me. I took it with me because Starenko was going to be there. And the craziest thing about him, in the smoothest way possible, takes the focus from him and puts it on you. Like, and you don't even realize he's doing it. Like, I was like, hey, Mr. Starenko, I'd like to get this signed. Oh, yeah, okay. I said, this is my favorite cover. And he's like, yeah, well, where are you from? I'm from here and here. And before you know it, I'm answering all of his questions. And I'm like, wait, I'm supposed to be the one to ask the questions. Like, and it was just so, and he does it magically. Like, you don't even know it's happening. It's just, he's done signing it. And you're like, okay, I didn't ask any of my questions and I'm done. Okay. He just talked about me. Okay. All right. You know, so that was the coolest thing about him.
Yeah, he's cool. The thing I always thought was cool about him is he's always like dressed like to the nines, right? Like,
oh,
he's always in a suit. Like I'm always like baseball cap, t-shirt, you know, schlubbing it, even when I'm working behind the counter. And he's always like dressed to the nines. I love that mm-hmm. about that guy.
Yeah.
And he's always got that hair like super slick and tan.
Yes.
It's like the comic version of what was that tan actor back in the day?
George Hamilton.
Thank you. Yeah, he's like the George Hamilton of comic books. Starenko. Love it.
All right, David, let's talk about some upcoming appearances if you have any. I don't know if you have any on the slate. Let's plug that social media website and all that stuff one more time before we wrap it up.
Yeah, so the best way to find out everything that we're doing is just to go to our link tree, and it's linktr.ee/funtimego, all one word. So if you go there, it's got all our updated like information and everything that we've got active in the moment. So as an example, right now we've got the Second Chance, Super Kaiju, the Indiegogo campaign. There's the pre-launch for the Miss Mina, and we've got I've got my podcast that's over there, the Corner Box, and then we've got our Instagram and Facebook over there. So that's the best place to go. That's linktr.ee. I don't know why they do it like that. /funtimego. So that's got pretty much everything. And then in terms of appearances and stuff, I'm not doing it. I'm going to be at San Diego probably, but I'm just there to do other business, not do the comic books, like not do the creative comic book stuff. I'm not used to putting myself out there in this way. Like I'm usually the guy behind the scenes. Like, you know, I was the editor in chief of the fourth largest comic book company in North America, and most people don't know who I am. And that's for a reason. but I'm okay. Trying to step out and be in front of the mic and in front of the camera a little bit more. So, but no plans for any upcoming events, but everything that we're doing is on that link tree. And that's where you'll find us. We're going to be doing some live stream stuff for the Kickstarter. We'll be doing the podcast, but that'll be about the end of it. I'd rather invest my time and energy, honestly, on the online stuff, because I feel like that's where people are these days. You know, they're on their phones and they're kind of hanging out there and they're doing stuff like this, you know, listening to stuff like this, like your podcast. So I think I'd rather be here for now.
Okay. Well, David, we're going to wrap things up. Is there any last words you would like to tell the listeners real quick?
No, thanks, John. Appreciate you having me on. Hope I didn't go on too long about anything. Really hope that people give the books a look. I'm really proud of the work that the team is doing. And the writing doesn't suck. It's like, so give us a try or at least give us a look. And I appreciate anybody that does that.
All right. With that then, ladies and gentlemen, thanks again, David. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule to sit down and chat with me tonight. And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with David Hedgecock, talking about his two projects, the first being, of course, Super Kaiju, and the second one, which is coming out a little bit later this year, Miss Mina and the Midnight Gladiators. So I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and definitely check out what David's got going on. He's a real cool creator, and I want to thank him once again for taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. So with that being said, it's time to start wrapping this bad boy up. First off, let me tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode for that matter. First of all, you can find me on X. My handle over there for my personal account is @PVDMVP. You can drop me a line if you like over on the Facebook, Instagram, or Threads. Just look for @PVDcast. And if you want to be old school and drop me an email, johnorlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about this podcast because you enjoyed this episode so much. Well, please let them know that there's a lot of different places where they can hear the PVD cast. First of all, it's available at PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting app or outlet, go to the search bar, put in PVD cast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it. Why? I don't know. It just works that way. Anyways, put in PVDcast, maybe put in my name after it, and you should find it. And of course, if you are listening through one of those outlets or one of those apps, please make sure that you rate, review, and while you're at it, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. And again, I want to thank everybody who has been rating and reviewing and subscribing. I really do appreciate it. As many of you probably know, rating and reviewing moves me up the algorithm some and helps to let other people know about the PVD cast. So I really, truly do appreciate it. But there's another way that you can hear this great podcast. That is through the Facebook page. Once again, that's @PVDcast, where every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there you have it, three simple ways where you can hear the PVD cast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. We'll be right back. following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2024.